His glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, December the 17th, 2015, in my slice of heaven. And the current temperature here is exactly 41 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Dear brothers and sisters, good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Celebrations, celebrations, and celebrations galore are a way of life in our spiritual paradise. We just concluded the 15 days of non-stop celebrations to mark the 90th birth anniversary of our beloved and revered Lord Sai. And in exactly 8 days from now, the abode of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba will celebrate the holiest day in the Christian calendar with the global Sai family, La Prashanti Nilayam style. We will serenade him, glorify him, recall his teachings. We will attempt to walk in his footsteps and rededicate ourselves to his gospel of love and compassion. Yes, you guessed it right. And speaking of superstar Jesus Christ, everything in the ashram right now is pointing to a glorious Christmas 2015. As a matter of fact, everything since January 1 of this year, the 90th year of Baba's divine descent, has been glorious. And the Christmas too promises to be extraordinarily grand and spiritually uplifting. The signs of the glory of Jesus the Christ are all over our ashram. Turn in any direction, and everywhere you can spot smiling faces going about in teams, carrying loads of beautiful lights and holly and poinsettias and stars and angels. My personal favorite every year is that hidden gem, that little park behind the golden Ganesha with the umbrella. There, along the trail, you can see the golden statue of Lord Jesus standing on the highest point. And at Christmas, does he ever get into the mood to celebrate with us? That look of serenity and love on his divine countenance is just incredible. And with all the decorations on his person and around him, does he ever look so divinely handsome? In fact, the entire ashram atmosphere is getting charged with the joy of Christmas. And anyone who has ever been to Prashanti Nilayam during Christmas will agree with me that we truly celebrate the spiritual version of Christmas with prayers and singing of carols and remembering the gospel of Christ. So, while elsewhere, this season is also associated with retail sales, gift exchanging, Christmas parties and so on, here in Prashanti, we are hosting the international community that has come to the ashram to reclaim the true Christmas spirit. Just walk into our Western canteen at lunch and you will find it packed with devotees from every culture and country, and the happy carolers are busy practicing away at the conference hall by the bookstore. We are also enjoying, luckily for us right now, some picture-perfect weather with the lows in the late teens and highs barely 30 degrees Celsius. Excuse me. Speaking of highs, the excitement is at its highest because devotees from the United Kingdom are in charge of this year's Christmas decorations. We are so looking forward to some English magic to our celebrations this year. Dear listeners, the thing about our Prashanti Nilayam is that we are just so used to waking up each morning to a new look, a new decoration, a new theme, a new concert for life. Here is truly an eternal celebration. And Prashanti truly is the most happening place in the world. We are filled with joy and bliss, and everything is so well looked after for us. From the best music, concerts, dramas, dances, bhajans by Baba's beloved students to talks in the satsang hall. And then there is the very clean, pure and incredibly affordable food. So many choices, so many canteens and kiosks and the shopping center and the bookstore and the Sai Blossom store, parks and trees and joy and bliss. That is life in Prashanti Nilayam, the seat of all things true, auspicious and beautiful. The powerful name of our Lord Sai today has come to spell loving excellence in every language and in every situation. Meanwhile, to amplify this fact, let me share with you that Swami's divine instruments, thousands of Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba's hands and feet, are right now working around the clock for the past 15 days in Baba's Chinnai abode called Sundaram. And these Sai Seva Dal volunteers are, as we speak, living out the message of Bhagwan Baba and of Jesus the Christ by placing the interest of the downtrodden above their own. In an organized, systematic and professional manner, Sai Seva Dals from Tamil Nadu are delivering supplies every single day to thousands of homes, especially to those worst affected by the recent floods. They are the perfect exemplars of Baba's message that the hands that help are holier than the lips that pray, and that truly service to man is service to God. Dear listeners, please stay tuned to my colleague Raghu's segment coming up at 11:30 this morning. It's called Service Love in Action. Therein, he will give you a detailed update on the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization of Tamil Nadu's heroic relief work in the aftermath of the Chennai floods. And please continue to stay tuned to Morning Glory, as I have two delectable interviews on the menu for you this morning. First, my colleague Bishop Rushti's brand new Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories interview with Dr. A. Arun Kumar. This interview will be followed by possibly my life's most sublime interview with a devout Christian that I was honored to record on 1st of January this year. Now, this interview was a live studio interview, and my guest sat across from me and was very special that while she was speaking, the energy in the studio when she spoke was just like that of the interview room with Bhagwan present. Given the fact that we are approaching Christmas and my sage and spiritually mellow guest has just recently merged in the cosmic light, I feel it's appropriate for me to play that short interview with the late Ms. Joyce Darlene Barker of Canada in the second half of this show. But first, let us enjoy this Radio Sai exclusive, a brand new Fleeting Moments interview with Dr. A. Arun Kumar. He is in conversation with my colleague, Radio Sai's very own Mr. Bishop Rushti. Have a listen, please.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. And in the studios today, we have Brother A. Arun Kumar. He is someone who had the very blessed opportunity of innumerable interactions with Bhagwan right from the time he joined Bhagwan's institution in 1997. In fact, the first day Swami arrived to Puttaparthi after the summer vacation, he spoke to Brother Arun. And Arun was at that time completely new to Swami, and what began on that day continued for more than 10 years. He completed his MBA 1997 to 1999, and then he went on to do his PhD, that is from 99 to 2004, and all through Bhagwan was very personally involved in everything that Brother Arun was involved in the institute and in the hostel. Again, thanks to Bhagwan's guidance, instruction and blessing, he was part of the convocation drama for 4 years, 1997, 98, 99 and 2000. He was also one of those members chosen by Bhagwan to serve very distinguished elders who came to Prashant Nilayam, be it Dr. Abdul Kalam or the former Prime Minister, Mr. Atal Bihari Vajpayee, the other chief ministers of states, and a host of extracurricular activities and opportunities to live with Bhagwan, to bask in his close proximity and to listen to him and sit at his lotus feet and derive lessons of life. Brother Arun is really one of such extremely privileged students of Bhagwan's university whom Bhagwan chose to give so much of himself. Prior to coming here, he was a graduate in computer science, which he had done in Hyderabad. And after his PhD in Bhagwan's Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Brother Arun worked in the IT sector and in the banking sector. He has over 10 years of experience now in banking and credit card industry and is currently employed at a IT firm named Pega Systems as a principal product designer. He is based in Hyderabad. And we are very happy that in this summer month of May, when Bhagwan used to be in Kodaikanal and Brother Arun is one of those who had the chance to be with Bhagwan in Kodaikanal so many times. Definitely he was there in 99. I know that for sure. And he also had the opportunity to be in many other subsequent years. So I really consider it as a Bhagwan's blessing that we have you, brother, in the studios of Radio Sai. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sairam, thank you, brother.
So tell me, since the thought of Kodaikanal came, what memories of being with Bhagwan in the Blue Mountains come to you?
When I was a new student, I did not know much about Kodaikanal. I still remember, I think it was somewhere in June, July 97. So our academic year starts in June. And this was hardly a month or two after I joined here as a student. It so happened that during the mandir session and the evening session, I had gone out for a cup of water. And I had a small slip and I fell down.
Okay.
And though it was only 1 or 2 months in Swami's institution, I had already developed this karma thought of feelings. So I instantly thought that I must have committed some mistake for me to take a fall like this. So that thought was there in my mind as I walked back to mandir after having that glass of water. After we sat down, it started drizzling. And it was a slow shower and Swami had just finished the interview. Swami came out and Swami was looking at the rain and the temperature had cooled down a lot. It was very pleasant in Cyclone Hall. And Swami suddenly said, Puttaparthi feels like Kodaikanal.
Oh.
That was the first time I heard Kodaikanal in Puttaparthi.
Directly from Swami.
From Swami.
Beautiful.
And I was a new student and Swami was slowly interacting with new students. I still remember Swami looked at me and because I had just taken a fall and I was slightly troubled by it, Swami looked at me and asked me, have you been to Kodaikanal? I said, no, Swami. He said, will you come with Swami to Kodaikanal? I didn't know what to say, but the moment you say Kodaikanal, all the students get excited and there were a lot of boys behind me who were saying, say yes. And I instantly said, Swami, yes, I will come with you to Swami. To Kodaikanal. And Swami was happy. Swami smiled. So that was the first time I heard the word Kodaikanal and what it means. I was blessed to accompany Swami twice in 1998 and 99. That was at the completion of my first year MBA and my second year MBA. It was a beautiful experience. It meant being in very physical proximity to Bhagwan for close to a month.
Yes.
And there is this phase where those chosen boys, they get to spend some time with Bhagwan before going to Kodaikanal. And then there is a phase where you spend time in Kodaikanal with Swami. And then when you come back, also there is a small phase where Swami still gives you some chance to be around him after coming back from Kodaikanal.
Because the academic year has not yet started.
Yes, yes. June 1st, there is a lot of time before June 1st. And Swami used to give us boys a lot of chance. So other than Kodaikanal, we had chance to accompany Swami to Nagarhole.
Yes.
Then to Mudanahalli.
Yes.
And around Bangalore city, Swami visited the house of many devotees. It was very, very pleasant, very, very beautiful visits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since we are on the topic of Kodaikanal, can I ask you to just go down your memory lane and pick up some very cherishable moments with Bhagwan in Kodaikanal? You know, moments which are evergreen in your mind, moments which you can go and soak in that bliss any number of times.
During those days in Kodaikanal, what I come to learn myself is that when you cherish something very closely, Swami always responds. I'll give you this example why I'm saying this. When Swami sits in the hall, there is one chair, Swami sits, and there are a lot of boys seated around Swami. So what used to happen is, we used to take turns in sitting near Swami's feet, so we used to get a chance to touch Swami's feet, to massage Swami's feet. So there were these days when many days have passed and I still have not got a chance to sit near Swami's feet. I used to cherish very deeply in my mind that Swami, today I should get a chance to touch Swami's feet. And it used to happen that though I used to come late into the hall, they still used to be placed near Swami's feet and somehow I used to be called to come and sit in front.
Oh wow.
So I always realized that the moment you cherish something deeply, a lot of positive thought and with lots of love, Swami always responds. I'll give you one more experience. This was on the last day of 1998 trip. This was the day when we were starting back from Kodaikanal to Bangalore. We had all finished our bath and we were in the first floor, sitting outside Swami's room. So by the time I wound up my work, kept the baggage in the truck and went upstairs, I realized I was the last student to go up. All the students were already seated. So since I was the last student, I was sitting in the back. Swami came out from Swami's room. Swami could, you know, fathom the mood in the room. There was a lot of sadness because this would be the end of that physical proximity to Bhagavan. This would be the end of the Kodai tour. And Swami feels the mood in the room. And Swami quietly, he sits in the chair. Slowly, slowly he starts conversation. And in my mind, I'm like, again Swami, I have missed the chance of touching Swami's feet. And you know, wonder of wonder what happens. Where I'm sitting, in the back of the room, there is another chair behind me.
Yes.
I'm the only student sitting in the back of the room with one chair behind me. And Swami, almost towards the end of that interaction, Swami, he looks directly into my eyes and then he looks at the empty chair behind me. I somehow get a clue that Swami is probably coming to this chair. And then Swami, what he does, he gets up as if he is going downstairs. But what he does is he walks through the crowd of students and he comes and sits on this chair.
Oh my God.
The other end of the room. And where I was the last student, here I become the first student. Right at Swami's feet. And how Swami responds is, the moment I sat in front of Swami's chair, he places both his feet on my thighs.
Oh my
That
God.
Is the amount of love he gave, he showed, he responded. Because of that one pure thought that, Swami, let me touch your feet.
Amazing.
Those are amazing moments. Those are moments you can never forget.
Wow. And I guess you'd have had so many more such moments, you know, where a slightest thought and you're amazed at the way, to the extent he goes to ensure that, you know, A, to let you know that he knows everything.
Yes.
And B, that he's always there. If you want anything for your happiness, he'll be there to do it.
Yes. during my MBA days, there was this, I had this heart-shaped silver box which contained cloves. Now, this box was given by Swami himself. During 97 Paduka Puja, Swami gave this box to me and said, see, this contains cloves. So, you bring it to Mandir. So, whenever you see Swami, you offer it to Swami. Just imagine Swami telling his student what
to
do.
I know.
He gives a clove box and says, you offer this to Swami. So, from then, for the next 2 years, I carry this clove box daily to Mandir. Even by chance, I forget this box. Definitely one student will come and give me, brother, see, you left the box here, you forgot. So I was identified with that clove box. So one particular evening, Swami took the clove from the box, and as he was walking up the stairs where the present samadhi is, Swami was still holding the clove in his hand. Usually he immediately puts it in his mouth. That day he was busy. So as he was walking up the steps, I had a thought saying, okay, Swami might not eat it. He might give it to somebody else. Immediately, at that split second, he turns around. He places the clove in his mouth and he waves a finger at me, saying, I read your thought.
Oh my God.
There have been many, many such blessed moments, amazing moments.
Wow. Would you like to go back to 99 Kodai?
99 Kodai, yes. We had a lot of senior students, and the difference between 98 and 99 was that 99 was more students. 98 was more students. 99 was a lot more devotees. I think that was the first time that Swami took a flight to Kodaikanal. 98, we traveled in a bus. That was the only year Swami used that bus. And Swami spent hours sitting in the bus with us.
How was it having Swami in the bus with you?
It was really amazing. I'm going back to the Kodai 98 when the bus started from Bangalore and it traveled through Tamil Nadu, through Salem and all. And at several places, the devotees had arranged huge mandaps for Swami to come and bless the devotees. There were thousands of people waiting for Swami's darshan. And at every such place, we used to get on. And, you know, being Swami students, it is such a special opportunity that people, hundreds and thousands of people used to look up to you. Wow, these are Swami students. And, you know, we had this great honor of walking behind Swami in such huge gatherings. And at every such stop, Swami would send word saying, ensure that the boys have had some snacks. They have some water to drink. They have had some rest. And during our trip through the hills and all, Swami would stop his car and he used to walk those few steps and used to get into a bus. The first seat in the bus was built for Swami. It was a specially built chair for Swami. And again, the travel used to resume through the hills, and a lot of people used to be bowing towards Swami's car, thinking Swami is in the car, whereas Swami is here. And Swami used to laugh. See, they are saying pranams to the car. It means nothing. That it says that when you are identified with Swami, you know, you get that respect. Yes. Swami keeps saying, you are all zeros, but you put one, you put God before you, you get the value. So we realize whether it is an empty car or an empty bus, but when it is associated with Swami, you get a lot of respect. People worship you. We have seen that from various shortcuts.
Experience that literally.
Amazing.
And how many hours you were with Bhagwan in the bus?
The 98 bus trip, it started right after breakfast, somewhere around 8 to 9 in the morning. And we reached Kodai by close to 6, 7.
Oh my God.
It was a very long trip, very tiring trip.
Swami was in the bus all the while.
Swami was either in the car or in the bus.
Yeah. So you used to come into the bus intermittently.
Yes.
And then what would he do when he was sitting in the bus?
Swami, he would open the curtain next to his chair and he would keep looking out of the window. And I remember Swami had created one ring.
Mm-hmm.
It was Lord Rama's ring. It was a huge green ring. We were all actually, dispersed in the bus. We could all not kneel near Swami's chair. But Swami called all of us towards his chair. And while Swami was talking about, I think the previous day, he was talking about Lord Rama. He immediately created this ring of Rama. And Swami said, those days people used to be very tall. You look at this ring, it's so big. And Swami put the ring on his thumb finger. It was so loose. Swami was like playing with it.
Mm.
And Swami then, he used to keep asking, he used to narrate some experiences. Or he would ask what fruits are there in the bus. He used to ask for it. So he used to start distributing apples, oranges, you know, juice tetra packs. And when we passed through those, some of those lonely roads, whenever Swami used to see some poor person, you know, gathering wood sticks for fuel, Swami would stop the bus, call them, give them some eatables, give them some money.
Oh.
And Swami used to say, poor people, they have nobody to help.
Oh, so, you have seen that so many
times. Yes, yes, yes. So wow. Those are all memories that shall remain etched in our minds forever.
Beautiful. Yeah, so you were sharing about the 99 trip. You were telling us the difference between 98 and 99.
98 was, as I said, more students. So I guess Swami was more free. 99, there were a lot of devotees. I just remember this of the 1999 Kodai trip. This was the first time that Swami was going by flight to Kodaikanal. So basically it is it's a flight from Bangalore to Madurai, and from Madurai it is by road to Kodai. So we had gathered at the foothills of the Kodai hills, and Swami's devotees had arranged a place for Swami and his entourage to take rest. And from there we went by road. I remember in the flight, that was actually my first flight trip.
Oh, okay.
In 1999. And Swami, during the flight, Swami, he came towards all the seats. He went, walked till the end of the flight. He spoke to each and everyone to inquire whether they are fine, they are comfortable, whether they need something. So when he came to me, and I happened to be sitting next to my brother, and Swami looked at us and he asked us, is this your first flight trip? And it was our first flight trip, and we were really excited. And you could see the twinkle in Swami's eyes. You know, he's sharing that joy with us. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing moment. And during the Kodai trip, yes, Swami talks a lot of Ramayana Mahabharata, and during those days Swami used to create objects that belong to a particular period, Ramayana Mahabharata time. And he had created one a brooch, a sari like brooch that Mother Sita used to wear. And there was one chudamani, that is it's like a hairpin with a big stone in it, that Mother Sita used to wear in her hair. And Swami had again created a sort of a porcelain-like image with an image of Lord Rama on it. Swami said that this belonged to a very bygone era, during those thousands of years back. And I still remember Swami had created this nose stud of Kanyakumari.
Uh-huh.
Legend says that the deity in the Kanyakumari temple, she had a nose stud which was so bright that this temple was right at the shores of Kanyakumari, where there were a lot of rocks. So the ships that used to travel, seeing the nose stud, they used to mistake it for the clock, light tower.
Oh.
And there were a couple of ships that that ran ashore thinking that they are reaching shore. And for that purpose, that stone was, the nose stud was removed. Swami said it passed through many hands, but as of now it is where it is supposed to be. Uh-huh. It is safe.
Oh.
These are the words of Swami. And saying this, Swami had created a beautiful, beautiful crystal clear diamond and showed it to all of us. It was amazing. And the best thing is, after he shows it to us, he'll just throw it and it'll just vanish.
Wow.
Right from his hand, it'll just vanish into thin air.
Amazing.
Beautiful moments.
And these are moments you generally see only in Kodaikanal.
Yes, yes. Well, Swami decides to reveal these things to, you know, a small gatherings, not necessarily to huge, you know, public gatherings. So those who, you know, in Kodaikanal also Swami is in a different mood.
Yes.
He's not as serious as he is in Puttaparthi or Vrindavan. He's in a more light-hearted mood. I believe Swami used to mention that Kodaikanal is his playground.
Yes.
And so literally Swami reveals a lot of things. Swami used to talk about a lot of things in Indian history also. There are many things that maybe I cannot say it in a radio. But the intention of Swami was that to reveal that he knows everything.
Yes.
Swami spoke a lot of things and said, people think Sai Baba doesn't know anything. But Sai Baba knows everything.
Wow.
I think these...
So in some manner, every day was a revelation, right?
Every moment was a revelation.
Every moment was a revelation. Fantastic.
And it was really amazing moments, right from, you know, you get to see how Swami lives in a very close proximity. We used to wake up by around 4:35 in the mornings, and there were a lot of devotees, especially foreigners, who used to gather outside Sai Shruti very early in the mornings, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, like 12 o'clock in the morning itself, they start forming lines. So one particular morning, Swami, as he came out of the room, Swami asked us, did you hear the bhajans that was going outside? So since we were inside, none of us could hear it. And Swami said, see, you didn't hear, but I heard. Much before you wake up, I opened the window curtain and I gave them darshan when they were performing aarti.
Oh, the Nagar Sankirtan.
Nagar Sankirtan. And when we are inside Sai Shruti with Swami, you know, as you see Swami for, you know, couple of hours, you tend to forget who he is. But Swami's eyes are constantly on the clock. And the moment it's 8 o'clock, Swami used to say, okay, get up, boys, you go for a walk. I have to go and give darshan. Devotees are waiting. You know, it is at that moment that you realize, oh my God, Swami is so eager to go and give darshan. You know, all these days we are on the other side, waiting for darshan. But here we are in such close proximity that we forget that we are having darshan all the time. It is at moments like this that we realize, oh my God, we forget who Swami is. We forget that in whose proximity we are in. And it is so revealing. Swami is so eager to go out and grant darshan to devotees. It's amazing. There's a lot of learning that happens. And that learnings stay with you. Stay with you forever.
And the learnings that happen, you know, you mentioned that you get to see Swami at very close quarters. You live with Swami, so you see his schedule. And you are in some ways attuned to his schedule. So what were the things about Bhagwan's life, his routine, and the way he conducts himself, the way he interacts? You know, what did you observe that, you know, which was again something which was... a lesson for you.
Swami used to maintain the schedule very strictly, right from the time when Swami comes out of the room, when the breakfast sessions, the lunch sessions, the evening snack sessions, the bhajan, the dinner session. Swami is very particular about time. And the many things I have noticed is that he's always focused, though he might be, you know, with a group chatting freely, you know, cracking jokes, laughing. But Swami's eyes are constantly on the clock. Okay. It is either we might have forgotten something, but Swami says, oh, okay, it's so and so time. It's time to go. It's time for somebody else to come. Those devotees are waiting for me. I will call them. You wait here. You know, Swami is very particular about time, not wasting time. Another thing I have seen is about food. Swami used to hardly eat anything. Whatever he eats, very less. The moment he sits in his table, he will ask the students to say Brahmarpanam. And by the time the students have finished Brahmarpanam, Swami has got up.
Yes.
And Swami used to eat so less, but Swami used to say, you know, all of you are eating. That food comes to me only. I am never hungry. don't think about me. I'm not hungry at all. Because I'm receiving food from your mouths. And then Swami would go around, you know, it's almost as if, you know, he's the host and you're like the guest at Saishwati. He used to make sure that you're always comfortable. So he used to walk around, looks at each one's plate, and he would ask, would you like more serving of this? Would you like more serving of that? And there are times, you know, there are only few things that Swami, I have seen him eating, either pomegranate or, you know, muskmelon or watermelon. These are things which has no fat in it, there's a lot of water content in it. And Swami would be, you know, carrying a bowl in his hand and, you know, eating this pomegranate. And he would silently come behind us and over our shoulders he used to peep at our plate to see whether you're eating properly or not. And, you know, there were some really blessed moments when Swami would come and offer you some of those grains of pomegranate. And we used to be so happy receiving it from Swami, I mean, literally from Swami's own bowl. And we used to be so excited. It was great, great timing. And Swami, he doesn't disturb anyone. Like somebody is eating, Swami comes slowly into the room. And without making any fuss, Swami silently goes out. He will never tell you that I'm coming or I'm going. You know, it are these things that there's a lot to learn from it. So, someone of his stature, you know, he's not, you know, imposing himself on somebody. It's a really amazing down-to-earth, you know, yeah, feeling.
He becomes so much one with you that you actually forget who, that, you know, you're living with someone who's so infinitely greater than you in everything. But at the same time, he just becomes just one with you, right?
Exactly. I think there's one, you know, downside of being in Kodai with Swami is you sometimes forget you are with whom.
Yes.
Because from morning till evening, you're seeing such, you know, you're seeing him with at such proximity. You tend to forget he's God, that unless when he says, okay, I have to go for darshan. It is, you know, words like this which suddenly reminds you that you are in his presence.
Mm.
You tend to forget it.
And you also have these opportunities where Swami would send you for boating and shopping and horse riding and sightseeing. So what are those memories of 98 and 99?
There is one thing that Swami will always ask students to go and buy. One is that pink sugar candy.
Mm.
And the other is shawls, woolen shawls. And he would always say, see, they will be boys standing there in some place in the market holding these packets of sugar candy. Buy from them. They're poor people. Okay? And shawls, buy from those Tibetans. Because they come from far. They work very hard. You buy from them, they will be happy. So the idea of giving us money to go and buy is not exactly, okay, one way is for us to enjoy the shopping experience. The other way is Swami is also ensuring that money reaches them and, you know, it comes handy for them. So, and what we do as students is we always buy the sugar candy and we come home and Swami would always ask, okay, what did you buy? Show me. And we used to show, you know, the hats that we bought or the woolen material, the shawls that we bought. And Swami used to be so excited, you know, he used to look at everyone's, he used to open each one's shawl, okay. And Swami used to again surprise us that before the Kodai trip is over, he will again himself purchase shawls. And these shawls would be pure wool cotton. It used to be so light. But when you cover with it, it's so warm. These things, I don't know where Swami sources it from, but these are like really beautiful woolen shawls. Before the Kodai trip is over, Swami will call us and he will hand each one a shawl. I said, okay, give it to your father and mother. So all really blessed moments. And Swami used to sometimes try on those hats that the boys buy. And not many know that Swami has a personal collection of sunglasses. Swami utilizes this trip to, you know, wear one or two of them. He used to just wear it for a couple of seconds or maybe a couple of minutes. He used to say, hey boy, see here. And he used to suddenly used to wear those sunglasses and he used to look like a rock star. And, and the boys, they will start laughing. And Swami used to enjoy and he used to pose for photographs. I still have some of those photographs. It's a very beautiful moment.
He really knew how to make us so comfortable, right?
Exactly. So used to come down to our level.
Yes.
But then he used to take us to a different level.
So that he can take us to those levels.
Yes.
Amazing. And as you have mentioned, there were a lot of interaction sessions, right? Before the darshan, after the darshan, you have so many hours that you spend with Swami. You have any memories of the kind of conversations you had or any occasions where Bhagwan said something and that set you thinking?
I don't in detail recall those conversations. But what generally used to happen is the moment Swami comes out of his room in the morning, there are only students around him. So Swami is very free. Swami doesn't talk about, discourses or very high spiritual matter early in the mornings. It used to be like simple things like, okay, what's the plan for today? What did you guys do yesterday? Those kind of things. It's just warming up for the day. And immediately after, there is a breakfast session, after which again, there is a small session where only the students are around Swami. And Swami talks very freely. And after this is the darshan where Bhagawan goes to grant darshan to the devotees and Swami sends the boys for a walk in the mornings. So we used to go for a walk around the lake and after we come back, when Swami is again seated in the hall, in addition to students, there are a lot of elders, there are a lot of officials from the trust and all. Now this is a time for serious talk and Swami talks a lot about spiritual matters, about Swami's own childhood, about episodes from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. And after that, we have the lunch session. And there is a break where Swami, you know, Swami himself goes to his room for rest. And even the students, they take a break. And again, after that, Swami comes out. Again, the students are seated outside his room in the first floor. Swami comes down, we have this evening snack session, tea and snacks. And there is a small interaction with students there, only students are there. Then Swami goes for bhajans, all the students get an opportunity. Even those who are non-singers get a opportunity to sing in front of Bhagwan. And on a daily basis, Bhagwan gives discourses. And boys get the opportunity to speak in Bhagwan's presence. This session after this bhajan session is again a session where Swami elaborates on topics that he had discussed during the discourse. So Professor Anil Kumar is somebody who is very very excellent at starting topics like this. Swami appreciates that, in fact. So the moment we come back, Swami would definitely ask, so boys, what did you understand? What did Swami say? What did you understand? And Professor Anil Kumar is usually the person who starts the conversation. Swami, you mentioned this, so how can we take it forward? How do we understand? And so and so. And Swami is to elaborate at a much detailed level. And once this interaction is over, then there used to be a dinner session. And yes, that used to be the end of a typical day in Kodaikanal.
Beautiful. I mean, you have so much time with Bhagwan. You literally are partaking spiritual food, physical food, divine food all the time.
Talking about food, the food is so rich in Kodaikanal that if you make the mistake of consuming loads of it, you fall sick by the second day because there is hardly any digestion because you are sitting inside the house throughout the day. So what happens is Swami let the boys enjoy first 2-3 days. Then definitely there are a couple of boys falling sick. Even I fell sick in 98. And then what happens is your mind is totally taken away from food. There comes a time when the moment you think of food, you are like, oh my God, no, not one more meal.
Mm.
What that does is, you know, it tunes your mind towards more subtler things.
Wow.
I feel that is done purposely so that, you know, your mind start taking in more spiritual food and you stop craving for all the material stuff. I think that's a very, very good lesson.
I mean, you see so much of that no more fascinates you.
Yes. Yes.
That's amazing. That is one way of tuning you to something higher.
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful. And as you mentioned, you constantly see the human side of Swami and flashes of His omniscience, omnipresence and omnipotence. And as you were mentioning about this 1998 trip, you also had the chance to visit many places in Kodaikanal with Swami.
Yes, there is this place called, I think, Silver Cascade. It's basically a waterfall, and it is abundant during rainy seasons. So we used to go there to Silver Cascade. There's one more place called, I think, it's called the Devil's Mountain or something. It's basically a place where the hills are so steep, but it's always covered with mist. So when those mist clears, you see these huge stones. It's amazing mountain formations that you would not get to see anywhere else. So these are like a really amazing place. There is another place where there's a lot of market. There's a shopping area where you can visit and see what all things are on sale there. And the entire climate of Kodai is such that it lifts you to a different, mental state. When you see clouds below your feet,
yes,
you know, you literally feel that you're in heaven. And
you're in heaven with Swami.
With Swami, yes. That's an amazing place. I mean, if I feel that if it was the same experience either in Prashanthalam or Vrindavan, the effect might not have been the same. Mm. But then Swami has chosen such a setting that, you know, your mind is so tuned to accept what Swami has to give.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you're in the best expression of pristine nature.
Yes. Yes.
And you have the pure wisdom coming to you from the purest of sources.
Right. I remember one incident. This was, I think, in 98 when the institute buildings, the hostel buildings, they were being painted. And Swami was interacting with some of the senior members of the Sai family about the whole procedure, how long will it take, how much will it cost. And I still remember this amount. There was an amount of 11 lakhs that was mentioned. Swami needed that money for those painting. And Swami, I don't know for what reason, Swami said, I don't have the money, what to do? And he used to ask the students, see, I don't have money, I don't know what to do. And we all used to be confused. We didn't know what to do. We're still students. And then, you know, a couple of days later, Swami makes it a point to read each and every letter that Swami takes from devotees. So we have seen it throughout the day. When Swami is not interacting with the students, Swami would be sitting in one sofa. Swami used to be looking at all the letters. So one such letter, it arrived from the US. I think it was from the Books and Publications in the US. And it contained a check. And Swami showed us the check. I still remember Swami said, see, 11 lakhs.
Oh.
It has come. See, when you have decided to do a positive thing, things will automatically take shape to fulfill it.
Wow.
So this amount Swami didn't ask anyone. And right in front of our eyes, within a couple of days, that particular, check came with the same amount.
When you decide to do something good, the universe works together.
Yes. To make it happen.
To make it happen. Wow.
And that was a living example that we saw that time in Kodai.
I think these are moments which, as I mentioned before, you get to see only in Kodai, because you get the chance to live with Swami.
Yes.
I mean, all these things happen all the time, but you don't get the chance to actually witness it.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Perhaps only those 2-3 people who serve Swami at very close quarters in Puttaparthi or Vrindavan would have seen it. But now there is a group of 30-40 who get the chance to see pure love in action.
Exactly.
Amazing, brother. And you also have the sessions in Kodaikanal where Bhagwan grants you photographs with him. You have the chance to take a picture with divinity in the backdrop of
the lake,
the best of nature.
I'll tell you, this is something that Swami knows that every student aspires for.
Yes.
You know, a photograph with Swami.
Alone.
You know, as a student, I had the opportunity of looking at photographs right from the late 70s to the, 2000s. And in all those photographs, you will see a different set of students in each set of photographs. But you see the same smiling Swami.
Yes.
It is not that Swami is more smiling in an older photograph than a new photograph. No, it's the same Swami. It's the same smile. It's the same love. The voice keep changing as generations pass. We had photo sessions on the terrace of Sai Shruti. And, these are also, while these are very exciting moments, these are also moments of learning. I'll tell you why. Because Swami would be seated on a chair, and one by one the students, they get the chance of kneeling next to Swami, holding Swami's hand and posing for the photograph. That's a great exciting moment. Where is the learning? Is it when you are standing in the balcony, when you just look outside, you see hundreds and thousands of devotees waiting to have a glimpse of Bhagwan. That is the learning moment. That is the moment when you realize that Swami is giving you so much. From those thousands of people, He has chosen you, a small group of you, to be with Him at such close proximity. And it humbles you a lot. There's a lot of learning in that. It's a very humbling moment. And there are times, when you get this thought that, oh Swami, you're giving us so much. And at that particular instant, Swami would look into your eyes and he would be nodding in agreement. Yes, I am giving you so much. Those are very touching moments, and it's something that, every student would cherish. It's an amazing time.
Something which always will inspire you, right?
Exactly.
To be engaged for him.
Yes.
With him. In him.
Swami never wastes a single second. His every second is planned. It's an amazing time. It's an amazing time to be in Kodaikanal.
Yes, his every second is planned. His every second is planned, and I think even our every second he has planned. The very fact that you had the opportunity to be with him in physical proximity, that was also planned. He had orchestrated in such a manner that with whom, how much he has to share was all decided.
Exactly.
And it's definitely just his grace. And I'm really very happy that we have started off this conversation today in this year of Swami's 90th birthday. And we talked about Kodaikanal in this month of May. We really didn't get to know the story of how you came to Bhagwan. And I know that is a beautiful episode by itself. And then your interactions with Swami as someone who participated in the cultural programs and the dramas and various other activities and tasks that Swami entrusted you with in all these years from 1997 till 2004 and beyond. Even after that, I remember you've come many times and Swami would speak to you. So I hope and pray that we have this opportunity to continue this satsang whenever you are here next time in Puttaparthi. Thank you so much, brother, for coming to the studios.
Thanks a lot, brother, and I'm deeply indebted to Swami for having given this opportunity to share these thoughts of mine.
Sairam.
Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, on the 17th of December 2015. The current time in the ashram is 35 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You just heard a Fleeting Moments interview with Dr. A. Arun Kumar. He was in conversation with my colleague, Brother Bishu Prushti of Radio Sai. We welcome your feedback, thoughts and comments regarding this interview and any other Radio Sai program. As always, you can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. And now, dear listeners, I wish to share with you that on October the 31st, 2015, that is barely 6 weeks ago, at the age of 86, the deeply devoted Mrs. Joyce Darlene Barker of Canada merged into the cosmic light at the Lionsgate Hospital in North Vancouver after a brief illness. During her short stay in that hospital, she experienced the presence of her Lord Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba in the form of vibhuti manifesting upon her person and in the hands of her dearest friend, a fellow Sai devotee. Mrs. Joyce Darlene Barker had celebrated her last Christmas last year, that is on December 25th, 2014, right here in Prashanthi Nilayam, and she was blessed to speak to thousands of pilgrims in the Divine Presence in the Sai Kulwant Hall on that auspicious day. A week later, on January the 1st, 2015, she was my studio guest right here on Morning Glory, and we had a live interview with her. During this short interview, Joyce sat across from me with her eyes closed, her palms up, and she spoke from her heart. Her words were so charged with deep meaning that they absolutely moved the hearts of our listeners, and mine of course. Truly, that which is an absolute truth is valid for all times. Now, here I'm going to replay for you that interview that was recorded on, that was a live interview on January 1st of this year. And this is the very first time in my life ever that I'm replaying on this show a live interview about 12 months later. And once you listen, you will know why I said what I said, because during this interview, there was something so incredible about her presence that I could actually feel I was in the interview room with Bhagwan next to her, or Bhagwan speaking through her. The energy, the stillness of the interview, the sublimity of that moment is very hard to describe. And this is perhaps one of the most cherished interviews with the person of Christian background that I have had the privilege to record, and I'd love to share this joy with you of listening to Joyce Darlene Barker. Have a listen, please. It is my pleasure to introduce all of you to my wonderful studio guest, a dear friend and a fellow Canadian, Mrs. Joyce Darlene Barker, also known as Mrs. Moeller, and she is the celebrated author of Sai books for children and adults. Now, by way of introduction, I can tell you the nearly 86-year young Joyce was born on March the 14th, 1929, and she has, during her professional years, worked as a children's librarian for about 26 years and also became a minister of a small church, a non-denominational church, one of a kind, and there she experienced many miracles, including about 20 years later in her life, she realized that her teacher and her minister, Mrs. Elsie Hager, had been to Prashanthi Nilayam twice and had always loved Baba. Now, Joyce has been coming to Prashanthi Nilayam since 1988, and she has written many books for children as well as for adults about Baba, and they include the following titles: Where Did Grandma Go?, To India with Grandma, Bringing Baba Home, Grandma Joyce's Baba Tales, and she's brought out a CD of Grandma Joyce books. Joyce has also written books for adults, which include The Touch of Baba, Unforgettable Baba, With Love Baba, I Will Do Baba, I Will Change Baba, and the soon to be published, I believe, Finding My Way Home to God. So, Sairam Joyce, and a very warm welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam, thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here. Now, I want to begin by asking you, where did your Christianity begin?
Well, it must have begun in another life, because I really don't know where it came from. My folks were not religious. And one time when I was quite young, six, my mother started going to a little tiny church in a little tiny town, and she signed us up, my sister and myself, for a summer Bible study, a school, summer Bible school. That was the first time I heard the name Jesus. And I fell in love with him immediately. I fell in love with his compassion, with his dedication to everyone else but himself, to his wonderful words of wisdom, to his miracles that just blew me away. And I believed in miracles immediately. You and I and Einstein all have the same birthday.
Yes, indeed.
And Einstein said, there are two ways to live your life. One is as if everything is a miracle. The other, as though nothing is a miracle. And, of course, I believe everything is a miracle. And as a child, I just soaked up every word of Jesus like a sponge. I tried to live my life like Jesus. I tried to follow what he suggested. I prayed to him. He was my best friend. He was the one that I told all my troubles to, and he was the one that I listened to in prayer. And after this initial meeting of Jesus, I found that about 8 years of age, I was sitting with two little girls out in the country on a brick wall with our legs dangling over and a sunset in front of us. And I remember now giving them a sermon about...
Sermon on the wall.
about God, creation of a sunset.
Oh, wow.
And then I
the
remember...
The minister in you was brewing.
It was there, but I didn't know it. And the other thing I remember was the first funeral I did. And that was for a chipmunk. And the chipmunk was put into a little box. And we buried it, and I did a service for it. And you know, this was just right down my alley. I had no idea what I was doing. But he was coming through. God was coming through all this time. And with all the troubles that kids have growing up, there was never a time when I didn't turn to Jesus to say, what should I do? If Jesus were here, what would I do? So I have a great deal to be thankful for, that I was introduced to Jesus first. And so many years later, probably, I don't know, 60 years later maybe, was when I was introduced to the name Baba. It was through my teacher, Mrs. Elsie Hager, who was also the minister of this little church that I attended as the children were growing up. And she was a remarkable woman. You know, she taught us as well outside of church. She taught us how to live, not just as a minister, but just generally how to live. And I didn't know until much later that what she was teaching us was Baba. She had come, she said, to Baba twice. And 20 years later, after having classes with her, all of a sudden, I realize this woman is a mine of diamonds, because she was telling me something that I really wanted to know. Of course, those first 20 years, I didn't have a clue who Baba was, and one of her suggested reading for class happened to be a book on Baba. And it was a long time before I got around to reading Sandweiss's book.
The Holy Man and the Psychiatrist, by Dr. Samuel Sandweiss.
And that was the first book. And as soon as I finished that book, I wanted to go see Baba.
And here you are today. Yes. I think 2.5 months short of your 86th birthday.
Yes.
You just celebrated Christmas in Prashanthi Nilayam. You gave a very inspiring and elevating talk to the entire congregation of devotees in the Kulwant Hall. Now, going back, if you look back, Joyce, what was the first Christmas you had in Prashanthi Nilayam like?
Oh, my goodness. It was wonderful. I had been used to, up to the age of 6, in dealing with presents only. You know, Christmas trees, presents. My father would go to great lengths to let us know that Santa Claus was on the roof with the reindeer. There were sounds, and there were footsteps, and there were jingles, and we came out, and there was footsteps on the rug, and it was all Christmas. That was Christmas. And it was wonderful, but, then I discovered what Christmas was really about. It put the Christ into Christmas when I came to Prashanthi. It gave me an idea of what the real Christmas was like, the first Christmas. It was so magical. It was so beautiful. It was like, words fail me. All I can say is that it was pure, like a flute. It was pure like artesian well water. It was beautiful, like the jasmine flower and the smell of the jasmine flower. It was full of love and fellowship and caring for people. We all shared that basic belief in Sri Sathya Sai Baba. He was who we wanted to be with, we wanted to be around, we wanted to listen to, I wanted to watch every movement of his. He said, "Don't lose sight of me." In the hall, I had very good eyesight. I guess I still do, especially long distance. I would watch him until he was just an orange speck across Sai Kulwant Hall. Never took my eyes off of him as long as I could, because I followed what he said. Everything he said, I took to heart. Everything I heard, I tried to put into practice. He has been a wonderful part of my spiritual growth. And it was interesting because moving from Jesus to Baba was not a step up, it was a move over. His teachings were no different than Jesus. They were not in conflict with anything I had learned. In fact, they just made them stronger, more powerful, more understandable than anything I had had before.
Well, that's so eloquent and so heartfelt. Now, as a former minister of a church, Joyce, I'd like to ask you, what is your favorite Bible quote to explain the relationship of the growth of a Christian into a Baba devotee?
Well, I ask before coming to give me a verse, and I opened the Bible, and
okay,
this is what I opened to. It's 1 Corinthians 13, but it's not the usual ones that are quoted. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man or woman, I put away childish things. I started in as a small child giving sermons to a chipmunk. And eventually I grew up and out of being attached to any church and being able to look towards something greater and which covered the whole waterfront. The second verse after that is, "For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as I am known." To me, that is exactly what happened. Slowly, all of us have to grow through our pettiness, our jealousies, our angers, our fears, our griefs, everything that keeps us separate from God. And when that happens, then we do not see through a glass darkly. We see face to face with God.
Wow, very well said. Now, Joyce, I believe you were very fortunate to have interviews with Baba, and you had an interview where you sought clarity from him about the relationship between his teachings and that of Jesus.
Yes, I'll never forget that.
Would you care to share it with our listeners?
Yes, I will. Baba asked us if we had any spiritual questions, and I hit my forehead with my palm of my hand, because I had meant to bring those questions, and of course, Baba saw to it I did not. So, therefore, what I could ask him was, Jesus, I love you both. I cannot reconcile the two. And his profound and simple answer was, don't try. So I have never tried to figure out the whys. Why did I become a Christian? Why was the only one in the family who really was interested in this sort of thing? Why was it that my great-grandmother gave me her great, huge Bible amidst the relatives being very unhappy about it? And she said, she's the only one that read it. And that was that. Great-grandma was probably an influence that I wasn't even aware of as a child. So we learn, we grow, we come through all these painful experiences, and we have to do that. Nobody is immune to what we have to go through. However, Baba talks about like a morphine shot, that he gives us this morphine shot of love, of Baba, to help us through all this stuff that we have to learn before we can see him face to face.
Very well said. So he advised you not to try to reconcile.
No, and I haven't.
And Jesus still holds a very special place in your heart.
Very definitely. In my kitchen, there's a picture of both of them. In the bedroom, there's both of them. In my heart, there's both of them. I do believe that Jesus was sent by his father, Baba. I've never been hung up on dogma of any church. Whatever church I was close to is the one I went to. And they were all Christian churches. They all had different particular things that they pushed, so to speak, to the congregations. But I never seemed to be concerned about that. Whatever I needed to learn, I learned. Whatever I needed to read, the book was there. Whatever I needed to say when someone was in trouble, I said. But it was not me. It has always been God behind the whole universe who speaks.
Joyce, it's so interesting to hear how broad-minded you are, how open you are to loving God in every which way possible. And it's the same sentiment very refreshingly seems to echo from the Vatican this time around, because the current Pope, Pope Francis, has been talking about this open-mindedness, has been talking about accepting and letting people be who they are without trying to convert. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's fantastic. I haven't really read that much about it, but I do remember hearing about it. And my thoughts are that it's bound to be. It's going to happen no matter what. And that one day, it won't be in my lifetime, I don't believe, because of my age, but one day there really will be only one religion, the religion of love. It can't be anything else. God has willed it so, and it will be.
And to that thought of only one religion, the religion of love, we all say amen.
Yes.
Wonderful having you on the show, Joyce Darlene Barker. Thank you for sharing your thoughts, your experiences and insights with Morning Glory listeners.
Thank you for having me.
Sairam.
Sairam.
Sairam, brothers and sisters, thank you for staying tuned to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You just heard a replay of a live studio conversation with Mrs. Joyce Darlene Barker of Canada that was recorded in the studio during a live Morning Glory session on the 1st of January in this year. I look forward to your feedback to this interview by email at listener@radiosci.org. And with much sadness, I also inform you that on October 31st, about 6 weeks ago, Joyce merged into her Lord Sai, but the end was very peaceful. May she always rest in peace. With that, it is now time for me to bid you Sai Ram and to offer Morning Glory at the Lotus Feet. But before I sign off, I would once again like to take this opportunity to thank Bhagwan for this incredible honor he has bestowed upon me to host Morning Glory. This is a very grateful Karuna signing off and thanking you for your company and wishing you a very merry and a very holy Christmas season ahead. Until next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking and stay inspired. And may I gently remind you to listen to our segment, Service Love in Action, coming up in about half an hour, where my colleague, Brother Raghu, will give you an update on the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization of Tamil Nadu's heroic rescue and relief work connected with the recent Chennai floods. Thank you and Jai Sai Ram, and here are some important messages to leave you with. The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Satya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
Jai Shri Ganesha Vighnanasha Gajanana.
Jai Shri Ganesha Vighnanasha Gajanana.
Vidya Buddhi Sarva Siddhi Suranjana.
Vidya Buddhi Sarva Siddhi Suranjana.
Jaya Mangala Vinayaka Vandana.
Jaya Mangalayaka Shri Vinayaka Vandana. Jaya Kailashpati Shiva Shankara.
Jaya Kailashpati Shiva Shankara.
Samba Sada Shiva Shambho. Samba Sada Shambho, Bhakteshwar Sai Shiva Shambho, Prema Swaroopini Janani Ma, Prema Swaroopini Janani Ma, Charana Namostute Sai Ma, Charana Namostute Sai Ma. Balaji Govinda Saishwara, Jaya Panduranga Prabho Vittala,
Jaya Panduranga Prabho Vittala,
Jagadodara Hari Vittala,
Panduranga Vittala, Badarinath Vittala.
Panduranga Vithala, Pandarinatha Vithala.
Panduranga Vithala, Pandarinatha Vithala.
Panduranga Vithala, Pandarinatha Vithala.
Panduranga Vithala, Pandarinatha Vithala.
Mangala Shubha Karana
Mrityunjaya Mahadeva Maheshwara Mangala Shubha Karana
Nandi Vahana Naga Bhushana
Nandi Vahana Naga Bhushana Govinda Govinda Gopa
Tai Govinda Govinda Gopa
Tai Govinda Govinda Gopa
Smita Smita Dundana Mukara Nandalala, Nandalala,
Smita Sundara Mukara
Vinda, Nacho Nandalala, Nandalala, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar,
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Yeshu Pita Prabhu, Allahu Akbar, Shri Sai Pati Sai
Gangadhara,
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 Gangadhara, Gangadhara, Gangadhara, Gangadhara, Gangadhara,
Gangadhara,
Gangadhara,
Welcome to the Streams of Bliss, our series of audio specials, which are pure devotional melodies produced in the Radio Sai Studios as an offering to Bhagawan on his historic 90th birthday celebrations.
Namo Gadapataye Namo Gadapataye Nama Ramadapataye Namaste Yaskulam Godaraye Kadantaya Vidnanashine Shivasutaya Varadamurtaye Nama
Kapastambasu Prabhu Bharadvaj Sagotramu Sakala Devatarupamu Ratnakaravaksham Sai Bhavanu Nee Sab Mera Ram Ram Sab Mera Ram राम में है सब
गुरु मेरे पूजा गुरु गोविंद गुरु मेरा पार ब्रह्म गुरु भगवान
love
पाप आणी आई, पाप आणी आई,
माझे विठ्ठल रखुमाई, माझे विठ्ठल रखुमाई, माझे माहेर पंढरी.
Welcome to the Waves of Bliss, our series of audio specials based on Sai Bhajans, produced in the Radio Sai Studios as an offering to Bhagavan on his historic 90th birthday celebrations.
नजरों